Yeah.
Hold it down.
Oh, I just hold on. Okay.
Good evening. Welcome everyone to this evening's edition of our Dallas Philosophers Forum lecture series. It's great to see a few new faces around, in addition to a lot of old friends, and we hope you've had a chance to kind of get acquainted with some of your fellow learners. And especially welcome to those of you who found us through the meetup group. How many of us found? Many of you found us that way. Okay, well, great to see all of y'all. You can kind of think of this as a meetup group with a program. You know, it's a little different maybe than some of the other meetup groups. But we do want to encourage everybody to get together for the purpose of meetup groups get together, which is kind of exchange and converse and so forth. And hope you've had a chance to do that before the lecture. And We in the past had a tradition of journeying to a watering hole afterwards to continue the discussion, and with this kind of new influx, it might be time to revive that tradition. So if anybody's got, you know, ideas about a nearby place, you know, maybe we can kind of have an act two for those that are interested, because they try to close down here, I think, pretty much after our lecture goes out. We will have a lecture of about 45 minutes and then about half an hour chance to ask a question of the speaker. And you know, we ask that you make your remarks in the form of a question and not a sermon. And I'll kind of be the arbiter on that. And that it be directed to the topic at hand and not just kind of any random topic. And we'll try to give everybody a chance to ask a question before we double up and let somebody double up. And be sure and pay for your food if you ordered, and be kind to your wait staff. And if you want to be on our email list, Carla here at the second table will be glad to add you if you're not already getting notifications. We don't sell our list or anything. We just use it for our purpose. And we ask for a $5 contribution for the lecture. We're a nonprofit organization, but we have equipment expenses and mailing expenses and certain other advertising expenses to defray. And if you'd like to be a regular, you can have a 6-month, 12-lecture membership for $35, which is quite a discount. So I think that's the business. Now to the delights at hand, we have our old friend, Dr. Sverdlik, Stephen Sverdlik from SMU Philosophy Department, who has given us some excellent lectures in the past, and he's there this evening to present to us on the topic, Ensoulment and the Morality of Abortion, a History and a Critique. Dr. Sverdlik.
Thank you. Am I on there?
You're on.
I'm on.
Okay.
You can all hear me? Well, thank you for coming. I think since I've been given 45 minutes, and I'm going to try to keep track of the time, but I don't even look at it, so cue me. So I could start with an anecdote, I guess, or just why I got interested in this, because this is partly a philosophy talk, it's partly a morality talk, it's partly a history talk. And the reason that I got interested in Ensoulment was because I teach a course at SMU called Contemporary Moral Problems, and we deal with various moral issues, abortion, euthanasia, and so on. And for many years, for some going back into the mists of time, we have used, a number of us who teach this course, a textbook that some of you probably know called The Elements of Moral Philosophy by James Rachels, who's now deceased, but taught at the University of Alabama, and the book became very popular and went through a number of editions. And he died, and his son, actually Stuart Rachels, who's also a philosopher and teaches at a different campus at the University of Alabama, has sort of kept it going. So I think they're now up to about, or he's now up to about the 8th edition. And there's an interesting section in there on abortion that has some of the history of Christian thinking in, about abortion, and one of my hobbies is history, so I got particularly interested in the story that's told in there about the history of Christian views about abortion, which is, you probably understand, was connected to the question of when the soul enters a human body. And James Rachels had a very interesting and sort of amusing story about how the Christian view, which is to say the Catholic view up until the Protestant, until the Reformation, what the Catholic view was about when ensoulment occurred. And it's very amusing because he says at a certain point in time they accepted the homunculus theory, which you may have heard about, an old biological theory that inside the sperm was a little man. Homunculus means little man, and that what would happen actually during sexual intercourse was that the sperm would enter the woman's body with a little man inside of it. In other words, for many centuries it was thought the woman was just sort of a nest, kind of, and that the actual the baby the antecedents of the baby came from the man, and it just grew and grew and grew inside the woman's body. And the way Rachels tells the story, what happened was that eventually they developed microscopes and they realized that there was no homunculus inside a sperm, that what they were doing was looking at the nucleus of the sperm. And so the view about when ensoulment took place got sort of entrenched when they believed there was a homunculus, and when they later found out there was no homunculus, they sort of couldn't back away from it. So he tells this story about how the Catholic Church had sort of wed itself to a bad scientific theory about biology, and couldn't back away from it when they realized in the 19th century that the biology was false. And I got interested in this, and I talked to some biologists, and there was somebody named Ayala, Justin may remember, who came, and it was a Dominican priest, and I talked to him about this, and he said, I never heard about this. And I thought, well, maybe this isn't true. So I wrote to Stuart Rachels, because James Rachels was dead, and I said, you know, what source do you have for this story about the homunculus theory and its relation to the Catholic view about ensoulment? And he wrote me back, and he said, you know, I'm terribly embarrassed. My father wrote that passage, and I don't know what source he used. And I said, you know, I'm not sure you're right about any of that. And he said, well, gee, I'd like to know, you know, what the story is. And so I went to my colleague at SMU named Charles Curran, who's a very distinguished Catholic theologian. And I said, do you have some source about the history of Catholic thinking about ensoulment? And he said, well, yeah, there's a book by somebody named Connery. That's the standard book. I brought it. I've read the whole thing. And I read it, and I will now tell you some of the story, but it turns out that everything Rachel's put in the textbook was totally wrong. There was a theory of the homunculus that really was a biological theory, but nothing about the Catholic view about ensoulment had anything to do with the homunculus theory. And Stuart Rachels was very gracious, and he thanked me when I pointed this out, and I pointed out the you know, what the true history is that you can get from Connery's book. And in a later edition, he changed it, and he sort of gives me credit for teaching him about what the actual history is. So what I'm about to do is to tell you the real history of the Catholic teaching about ensoulment, and criticize some of the things Catholics have to say, partly on historical grounds, and then I'll try to say some things about sort of the deeper issues about souls and the status of the fetus, because I'm a moral philosopher, and I'm especially interested in the morality of abortion, and I'm only interested really in ensoulment because of its connection to some of these issues. The other thing I should say, and some of you probably know this, but others may not, that I myself am an atheist, and so I don't believe in souls actually at all. I don't think they exist. And so I think the morality of abortion has to be sort of decided on other grounds than when does the fetus get a soul put into it. But I think it's interesting actually for philosophical and historical reasons to just tell the story of Catholic teaching about ensoulment, because I think it sort of teaches us some things about its stance and about morality and the position that it takes on morality. So, to continue, Connery's book which was written in the 1970s, is a very, very scholarly history of Catholic and Christian thinking about abortion. And one of the things he says, and this is one of the things I'm going to criticize and, by laying out the story, one of the things he says is that the Catholic Church has always opposed abortion, right? He states as a sort of point of pride and something important about this church that its teachings, its sort of fundamental moral teachings have never changed, right? And that's one of its you might say its selling points is probably cynical, but one of the things that it offers itself to the world as being a sort of repository of unchanging moral truth. And he says that its teaching about abortion is an example of its holding to an unchanging moral truth. And what I want to explain is that that's only half true, right? Because what happened over time was that the Catholic Church actually radically changed its view about when ensoulment took place. But it is technically true that it never really changed its view about whether abortion is wrong. So it's actually sort of an interesting story. Now, I'll go through some of the parts of it. So how did Catholics think about abortion? Well, there were actually two components to their thinking about abortion, right? Because after all, they would have to decide the question of when the soul entered the body of the fetus. Right? But actually, for many, many centuries, they believed that the soul, or there were various views about it, but they believed that the soul entered the fetus after conception. Right. In fact, considerably after conception. Right. And so their view about abortion also was being governed by the fact that the Catholic Church is opposed to contraception. Right. As you know, it holds that contraception, any artificial form of contraception, is morally wrong because it's interfering with the natural function of reproduction. And so contraception is itself morally wrong. So what you find is that the Catholic Church did believe that abortion was wrong, but it was wrong, so to speak, for two different reasons at two different points in the gestation process. So let me start talking about one important figure in the history of Christianity and Catholicism, and that's St. Augustine. His dates are 354 to 430 A.D. He lived at the end of the classical period, just before the Roman Empire fell. Some of you know more, I'm sure, about St. Augustine than I do. St. Augustine was trained as a rhetorician, a sort of public speaker, and he had some philosophical training, but he was not sort of as learned as the most learned people were in his day in philosophy. So he did not know a lot about Aristotle, whom in retrospect we think of as probably the greatest and most systematic of the ancient philosophers. Augustine knew a lot of Plato, but he didn't know a lot of Aristotle. Right? And he had become a devout Christian, and so he does consider the question, when does ensoulment take place? When does the soul enter into the fetus? And he's apparently in the discussion, I'm relying on Connery, his most extended discussion of this, his basic position is it's hard to know when the soul enters into the body. And of course, you know, that makes a lot of sense. How would you have known in those days? I mean, there were no x-rays or no way to peer inside of a woman's body. So what would you have had to go on? You might have looked at miscarriages, and to some degree, if you were interested in animals, maybe you could look at gestation there to get some idea. But Augustine apparently is fairly frank about the fact that he's not sure when the soul enters the body. But he thought it was probably taking place 46 days after conception. Right? And that would be the point, he thought, when the fetus was fully formed, that it had arms and legs and a sort of recognizable physical body. Apparently he, like a number of ancients, had very, very sort of, you know, mistaken ideas about where babies come from, or at least how babies grow, because apparently he thought also that basically the woman's womb was a sort of a nest, and that the semen was deposited in there, and it sort of got warm and congealed and then sort of started to form the different organs. So he thought that, you know, over 46 days, it took 46 days for you to have a fully formed little being inside the woman. And that after that point, it just got bigger and bigger and bigger until it was born. Right. So now, how did he come up with 46 days? I mean, he wasn't looking at it, you know, at all by observation or anything. So I'll quote you the passage from Connery, where Augustine gives his most extended discussion of why it takes 46 days for the fetus to form, and at the point of formation, it takes on a soul. Right? He takes up the question in connection with the passage in St. John where Christ predicts that he will rebuild the temple in 3 days if anyone destroys it. Since Christ was speaking of the temple of his own body, Augustine compares the 46 years it took to construct the temple in Jerusalem with the number of days it takes to form the human body. He describes and computes the time of the development of the human body in this way. For 6 days after conception, the semen continues to have the appearance of milk. After that, it takes 9 days for it to turn into blood. 12 days are consumed in solidifying the mass, and then in 18 more days, it is perfectly formed with all of its members. If you did the math, you followed that. That comes to 45 days. But if you add one, you get the number 46, which was the number of years it took to build the temple. So that is how St. Augustine reasoned, right, about why it took 46 days for the fetus to form. It was an idea that was common in the ancient world, that the soul is the sort of moving force of the body, and so there was the thinking that until there was a body to move, there was no sort of soul, there was no job for the soul to do, so there just wasn't a soul. And so it was Augustine's view that ensoulment took place at the 46th step. Okay. So now, if you think about abortion, again, going back to that, this wasn't necessarily what he was interested in, but it's obviously connected to the moral issue of abortion, then it should follow that, you know, for the first 45 days, right, if a woman were to abort or if an abortion were to occur, right, that it would be the death of something that didn't have a human soul. So it couldn't be, if it were induced or intentionally brought about, it couldn't be murder in the moral sense of murder, because you weren't killing a being that had a soul yet. So you might think that it shouldn't be regarded as wrong at all, morally, to have an abortion, so long as it occurred in the first 45 days. But, as I say, the reason why that view wasn't accepted by Christians was because they were opposed, even from early on in Augustine's day, to artificial contraception, right? And so it was looked at that if an abortion were induced or it took place before the 46th day, it was morally wrong because it was a form of contraception. It was interfering with the natural reproductive process. Now, I take it that they believe that if it was wrong to abort a fetus before the 46th day, it couldn't be as wrong as it would be to abort it afterwards, because it was based on a different sort of moral issue. Before the 46th day, it would have been contraception. And I guess, and I know it was treated as wrong, but it's hard to believe it was treated as being as wrong as killing a person who has a soul. So I'm not sure exactly sort of how wrong artificial contraception was thought to be, but I'm sure they believed that it wasn't as wrong as killing a being that had a soul, which would be what would be true after the 46th day. Right. So you see, this is how somebody like Connery, who's a devout Catholic, can say Catholics have always thought that abortion was wrong from conception on, which is true, but there were two different issues here that were going on. One was, when are you killing a being with a soul, and when are you engaging in artificial contraception? So that those two things, you know, coincided, or they went right up against each other. So it was wrong always, but it was wrong for two different reasons. Okay, going backwards then in time, because as I said, Augustine himself didn't know Aristotle's works very well. In fact, as I understand it, he didn't know Greek very well. He knew some Greek, but his language was Latin. But as you probably know, eventually Aristotle's was sort of rediscovered in the later Middle Ages, and he became sort of the central, what should we say, his books became the textbooks in the medieval universities when those were founded in the later Middle Ages. So when the University of Paris and Oxford were founded by then, Aristotle's writings had been rediscovered in Europe, and they'd been translated into Latin, and so Aristotle's works became sort of the textbooks of the medieval university and medieval philosophical curriculum and so on. So Augustine didn't know them well, but eventually the great theologians and philosophers of the later Middle Ages looked to Aristotle to try to help them think about these questions. Right? Famously, Aquinas, the greatest later medieval philosopher, talked about Aristotle as the philosopher, as being the greatest thinker of them all. So if you go back to Aristotle, who was a biologist and who actually did look at animals and cut them open and try to understand animals, he actually had discussed ensoulment too, as pretty much as just a biological question. He wasn't a theologian and he didn't accept sort of Christian views about theology, although he was a believer. And so Aristotle's view about when ensoulment takes place was based on the idea that, again, the soul is the sort of moving force or the sort of animating force in a living thing. He, like all the Greeks, thought that every living thing had a soul. Plants had souls, according to Aristotle. Lower animals had souls, and human beings had souls too. And the soul of a human being, he thought, would be the thing that causes an animal like a human being to move. Like, until the thing starts to move, there's no soul there. And the way that you would know that something had a soul, in the case of an animal, would be that it started to move. So when did he think that ensoulment took place in human beings? Now again, he must have, you know, just been in some ways guessing, right? He couldn't have sort of observed anything really that would have helped him answer. So his answer was, I'm just going to tell you what it was. His answer was that the soul of males entered, ensoulment took place 40 days after conception. Okay, females takes longer. 90 days. Just males are kind of a more energetic and just sort of more advanced creature, I think, is basically what Aristotle thought. So male fetuses are ensouled at 40 days, female at 90 days. Okay. Now, so the number that Aristotle came up with wasn't that far from what Augustine came up with, based on, you know, very different sorts of evidence or support. The female, there was quite a bit of difference. Okay. Anyway, as I say, eventually Aristotle's writings got lost in Western Europe. They were still studied in Eastern Europe, that is to say, in the Byzantine Empire, where Greek was the language. But he was rediscovered, and he became sort of the textbook in medieval universities. How am I doing on time? Okay, I'm doing all right. So now we're up to 1260 AD, jumping ahead now to Thomas Aquinas, the greatest medieval philosopher. And on a question like this, Aquinas just basically accepted Aristotle. He thought that he was the greatest scientist that was available to Christian thinkers, and so he just accepted Aristotle's view about ensoulment. This became, although it was already very close to what people like Augustine said, this became sort of the official teaching of the church. There had been differences among Christians over the centuries about this. But I think it's fair to say that by 1270 or 1300, this Aristotelian view became accepted. Ensoulment for males 40 days, females 90 days. Now then something interesting. And they still accepted the idea that contraception was wrong. So morally, again, it's true. Connery's point is accepted at this point. Abortion's always wrong, but it's wrong for two different reasons. Okay? Now then, Rachel's was right that something strange happens around the year 1600. Right? He got totally wrong what happened around then, and it's very mysterious to me why it happened, but it did happen. That around 1600, after many, many centuries of teaching that ensoulment took place at 40 or 90 days, the Catholic Church did change its position. Right? And very quickly, incidentally. Two figures wrote books starting around 1620, and they pushed the ensoulment event back towards conception. Again, Connery tells the story. One of the two figures, and you will have never heard of these two figures, they were very, very minor figures as far as I know. One of them was named Thomas Fenus, 1567 to 1630, who wrote a book in 1620 called The Formation of the Fetus. Fenus argued that ensoulment takes place about 3 days after conception. He wasn't sure exactly, but about 3 days after conception. Another figure a little bit later, named Paolo Zacchia, 1584 to 1659, wrote a book called Questions on Medical and Legal Issues. And Zacchia argued that ensoulment takes place at conception. And as far as I can tell, Connery moves very quickly over this in a few pages. By 1700, the Catholic Church accepted Fenus's view that ensoulment takes place within about 3 days of conception. Want to be clear, because apparently even many Catholics are confused about this, and sometimes priests don't actually report the Catholic teaching correctly. But Connery states this at the end of the book as being the correct Catholic teaching as of 1977 or whatever, when he wrote the book, and nothing has changed, that the Catholic teaching is ensoulment takes place within 3 days of conception. It's a mistake to think that the Catholics teach that, officially anyway, that ensoulment takes place at conception. It takes place very close to it, within 3 days, they think, but they've never committed themselves now to the view that it takes place at conception. Okay, now, I'm very interested in intellectual history, and I find this very fascinating, because, I mean, Aristotle, Augustine, Aquinas, these are probably the three major figures in the Catholic tradition. Aristotle obviously was a pagan, but he had this role in medieval thought. And so how is it that all of these people's views got overturned all of a sudden around 1620? Like, what happened? I mean, why did the whole thing get overturned that way? And as I say, Connery is a very sort of faithful reporter of things, but he doesn't sort of stand back and go, this is amazing, how did this happen? He just kind of reports their views. And as far as the arguments go, I'll just mention one, which I find to be remarkably sort of weak, assuming I put myself in the worldview of people who believe in souls to begin with. Why did Zacchia think that ensoulment took place at conception? Well, the argument he gave was this. He said, look, the soul is a sort of rational, it enables, the human soul anyway, enables us to engage in rational activities. So why would it be, why would we take the movement of the organism to indicate that there's a rational entity in the being? It doesn't seem as though movement really requires rationality. Right? So if the soul is supposed to be with a rational entity in the case of human beings, he thought it was very odd to think that it would get into the fetus at the point when it starts to move, which was Aristotle's view. Now, but I mean, I find that interesting and convincing in one way. It would be kind of strange to think that the movement required a rational sort of entity to occur. But it seems to me that Zakia's argument shouldn't push us in favor of saying that ensoulment takes place near conception, because what's going on at that point? I mean, it's like a two-celled organism. He didn't know that at the time, but I mean, it's like a two- or four-celled organism. Why would you need rationality at that point in the gestation process? So if we're really saying that you'd only start to think that there's a rational soul in a fetus when it starts to do rational things, then I think you should push the ensoulment in the other direction, you know, maybe like to age two or something, right? further along, right? There's no real connection between rationality and movement. I want to go, well, yeah, that's right. But that would argue for making ensoulment later, not earlier. Right? So I find the actual arguments that went on at this crucial point in history to be very strange, because they don't seem, even in the terms that the discussion was going on, to be convincing. In other words, convincing from moving the point of ensoulment back from 40 days to around 3 days after conception. If anything, the main argument argues for putting it, you know, whatever, 9 months after conception, or maybe even after birth. Right? And in fact, of course, there are, getting now back to the abortion question, there are civilizations that don't actually regard a newborn infant as being a human being for a few days after birth. I take it that's because so often they died close to birth that they weren't thought to be sort of human until they were clearly giving signs that they were going to survive. Right. So that's... How am I doing? Okay. So that is the story, as far as I could put it together, about the Christian view of ensoulment. And again, one of the things that I want to emphasize, and here I'm criticizing defenders of Catholicism and other kinds of churches, because they will say things like what Connery says, that we have always taught thus and such. We have never changed. We are an unchanging church. We have unchanging teachings. And it is true, I grant this, it is true that, you know, Catholics have taught since early days, it's not mentioned in the New Testament, abortion is not mentioned in the New Testament, but early on, within like 100 years after the New Testament, there are Christian texts that condemn abortion. But the point that's interesting is that the reasons that were being used actually sort of changed quite radically over the centuries. And it would only have been considered murder, or the killing of a human being, a person, right, when there was a soul. And the Christian teaching about when there was a soul, right, actually changed quite radically over the centuries, right, and in a way that I find quite puzzling, because the greatest authorities in the church that had been accepted for a long time were sort of suddenly overthrown by sort of lesser-known figures for sort of obscure reasons. So there's a kind of illusion, I think, in the claim. There's something misleading in saying that we Catholics have always taught that abortion is wrong. Incidentally, I mean, and then I'll say a few things about sort of the moral issues here, but incidentally, if you study the history, and good Catholic and Christian historians, I think, acknowledge this, on a lot of other things, too, their teaching, even on quite fundamental things, morally, their teaching has changed sort of night and day. Just give you two examples that I'm familiar with. The Catholic Church, until about 1880, accepted slavery. It never condemned slavery. And in fact, in the United States, but you know, it's a world church, so there are the things that one could say about other places, but in the United States, Not merely did Catholic churches in the Confederacy not condemn slavery, but Catholic churches sometimes owned slaves. So they had no particular problem with slavery until, and as far as I know, no important Catholic condemned slavery during the Civil War. Or if they did, it would have only been Northern Catholics, the Southern Catholics did. So the idea that it's been unchanging on something as fundamental as slavery is false. Another thing that, that's now more current is capital punishment. In the last 20 years, the Catholic Church in the United States, and I think maybe even the Pope himself, has condemned capital punishment. But capital punishment was always accepted by the Catholic Church up until about 20 years ago. That what they've tried to do is come up with what they call a consistent ethic of life. And they've thought that, well, you can't condemn abortion, as we're clearly committed to doing, if we don't also condemn capital punishment. So they've thought that you sort of had to have a package deal here about these two life and death issues. But in fact, until 20 years ago, the Catholic Church had no problem with capital punishment at all. And in Catholic countries, capital punishment was quite commonly carried out, and the Church had no problem with that. So one of the things that I'm arguing for, trying to suggest to you, is that churches that claim that there are these unchanging moral truths that they have embodied and espoused need to be looked at with care. And in the case of abortion, which is where the Catholic Church is so outspoken and clear, in fact, there's been this fundamental change. So just sort of to say something about my own views about this, obviously there's a lot more to be said. One of the things I think this discussion brings out is, to me as an atheist, that the idea that we ought to think about an issue like this in terms of ensoulment, I find fundamentally misguided. Because not only do I not believe in a soul, but I find it very hard for the people who do believe in a soul to give me any reason to say it's this point in the gestation process that a soul gets in there rather than that. It seems as though, given what people think about a soul, it could be any point in the gestation process, because we're not told clearly what difference a soul would make in the behavior or the activity in the fetus. Some of you may know that John Locke, the British philosopher, once asked, and I don't know what his answer was, but he asked whether God could put a soul in a stone. If a soul is such a thing that it can be in a book or a podium or a stone, and otherwise it would just be the same, then there's no way to answer the question scientifically about when ensoulment takes place. And I think because it's not a sort of scientifically verifiable kind of an entity, and it doesn't seem to connect with any particular process or activity in a thing, if you believe in a soul, you could believe it got put in, at conception. You could believe it got put in at the 13th day, at the 20th day. There's no telling when it gets put in there, because we're not told anything about what difference it makes to the activity of the fetus. So for me, being an atheist, if I think about abortion and whether it's right or wrong, and if it becomes wrong at a certain point, I'm not going to think about it in terms of when does the fetus get a soul. For me, it would relate to things that are observable and to some degree are scientifically studyable. One of the most important of them, I think, although this doesn't settle the matter, but I think it's probably the most important sort of milestone morally, is when does the fetus start to feel anything? Or when does it become sentient? Because it's living before that point in time, for sure. It's living from the point of conception on. But we don't think that killing living things as such, or most of us don't think that killing a living thing as such is morally wrong. It's killing things that have certain kinds of characteristics or properties. The most important, I think, in thinking about this is whether something can feel things, of pleasure and pain, or it's conscious or not. And as some of you know, the best evidence we seem to have about this with regard to the fetus is that a fetus isn't sentient. It doesn't feel anything until the end of the second trimester. That is to say, about 6 months after conception, well beyond the point that even Aristotle and Augustine thought that ensoulment took place. And so, to me, that's an important point in thinking about the morality of abortion, although it actually isn't true that most women who have abortions get abortions anywhere close to that point in time. Most abortions that occur in the United States happen in the first trimester, something like 80 or 90% of them. So most abortions in the United States don't even get close to the point where a fetus feels anything. And so that to me is a strong suggestion that there's nothing morally wrong about abortions before that point in time. So I could talk more about that particular thing or about the intellectual history thing that I focused on, but maybe is this a... Well, I've run out of things to say. So anyway, okay, so you can fire away now. That's all I
This is probably another whole talk, but I'm not sure I have a common view of what a soul is. What are the characteristics of it? Is it a thing that gets implanted in you? Is it a characteristic like a life force that you have? And how has that kind of changed over a period?
Yeah, I'm not... That's a great question, and I can't give a good answer or a great answer. I mean, one thing I do know is that for the Greeks, or at least the Greeks, I think thought of souls as kind of forces that sort of activated or brought about the processes that were associated with life. So as I said, I think it was a common Greek belief that there was a soul in plants, and that's what made them, you know, act like plants, like grow and so on, and flower and so on. And there would be an animal soul for animals that made them move and do the things that animals do. People like Aristotle thought about the soul differently from the way Plato did, to take the two most famous ancient Greek philosophers. And Aristotle tended to think of it in that same way, even about human beings, that it was just kind of the force or it's hard to explain. It's the goal. It sort of gives us the goal of the activities that are particularly human. There's one little passage in Aristotle, as I understand it, but there are more passages in Plato where it's thought of as a kind of an entity. This is the picture that Christianity picked up as well, and Judaism as well, that the soul is a kind of an entity that could exist separately from the physical body. Aristotle tended not to believe that the soul could exist independently of the body, and that's one of the reasons why the medieval Christians had trouble totally accepting Aristotle. It was at that point that they kind of went in the other direction, towards the idea of a soul as a sort of separable entity. Right? And I think that's something like that idea is what, you know, Christians and Jews and Muslims believe in, that there's some kind of that your mental life sort of occurs in this entity, and that this entity is not physical, and it's capable of existing independently of the body. That's the thing I don't believe exists. And that's the thing that it seems like when Christians go, well, ensoulment takes place at, you know, say the third day after conception, they're thinking of something like that, and I go, well, what tells you it got in there on the third day? Since it did, it seems like it could have been the first day or the tenth day, you're not telling me that it makes any difference to the way the organism actually operates. The Aristotelian notion of soul did think that there would be a difference in the way a thing operated or behaved if it had a soul or it didn't. Like it made a difference in the activity of the thing. I don't know if that's...
As the soul goes on into heaven, if you...
Well, Aristotle, most of Aristotle's teachings, as I understand it, don't accept that's possible. That if the soul is sort of the form of, or the activating force in an organism, but it can't exist separately. Although there are these some passages where he talks about the rational soul may be able to live independently or exist independently of the body. But it's other philosophers and other religions that think of the soul as something capable of existing separately.
Question to your left over here.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I'm interested in knowing the intellectual history of the idea of the soul, right? The soul is not a Jewish, I don't think it was in the Old Testament. The best I can find is in Plato's Republic, the last chapter, that delved a little bit into the idea of the soul.
Yeah.
So how did they simply adopt that Greek idea of a soul and then turn it into a theological underpinning for their religion?
Yeah.
That's what I'm interested in, if you can expand on it.
I can only expand on it a little bit, because I'm certainly not a historian of religion. I know a little bit about, you know, the philosophical stuff. I know a little bit, so I'll give you the 2 minutes. Yeah, I mean, of course, Christianity, you know, developed out of Judaism, right? And Jesus was Jewish, and so were the other early Christians. So I think the early Christian ideas come from Judaism. Okay. Now, from what I understand, and probably the people in this room know a lot more than I do, but from what I understand, for most of the... you know, what Christians call the Old Testament period, yeah, the Jews didn't have a notion of sort of a soul in the way it later developed. They had some notion of kind of an afterlife, but it was not sort of a very distinct thing, and it certainly wasn't sort of a notion of heaven or anything like that, right? As I understand it, late in the history of Judaism, like in like the 2nd and 1st century B.C., some of these ideas start to appear, and as I understand it, and this is sort of poignant, that they started to develop when the Jews rebelled against Roman rule. In some ways, the idea developed because they were demanding so much sacrifice from people to do these kind of suicidal sorts of battles against the Romans, and they were vastly outnumbered. Ideas about an afterlife became more important in Judaism, in a way, as I understand it, to kind of encourage people to make sacrifices of their lives, because the idea would be that they had a soul that would, you know, go to heaven. So that the Christians got some of these ideas from very late Judaism. Not even ideas that are all necessarily in the Jewish scriptures, but that other writings, like the Dead Sea Scrolls and some of the other other writings of this crucial period in those last 2 centuries before Jesus' life, that some of these ideas about the soul and the way that Christians picked it up developed.
Were they indigenous from the Jewish tradition, or is it something they borrowed from the Greek or even the...
It's a complicated story, and I think, of course, in the ancient Middle East, there were various sorts of civilizations in contact with one another. At certain points, Jews did come in contact with Greek ideas. Philo of Alexandria, if you know that name, is a Jewish philosopher who knew some of the Greek philosophers like Plato. So at some point, you find kind of merging of Platonic ideas of a separate soul. I think you probably find them in some of the Middle Eastern religions. And Christianity, as I understand it, picked them up.
Okay, you seem to be talking mostly in reference to Christianity, but I was reading a book on Judaism that talked about, that mentioned abortion briefly, and mentioned that if they thought abortion was wrong because the fetus would be considered part of the mother. Do you have anything you would want to say about the morality in relationship to that kind of idea?
As I understand it, some Christians thought that too. It's kind of odd. I mean, a woman could have an abortion and survive, right? So if she had an abortion, it wouldn't be as though her life would be in danger.
Oh, no, they thought it was like cutting off a finger. So even though you could get away with doing it, you wouldn't like morally promote cutting off fingers. It's any morally condemned when you cut off your fingers.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm not that familiar with that, but of course, that's not to say it's murder.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, the view that's based on this ensoulment idea is that you're killing a being, a separate being that has a soul. So if you say, and this is kind of the way, you know, some people want to talk about abortion in a kind of secular context, you know, that it's part of the mother's body, so she has the right to do with it what she wants. And so if you're thinking of it, well, you know, it's like a finger. Well, you know, in some cases, can I cut off my own finger? Or if it's wrong to cut off my own finger, it can't be as wrong as for me to kill you, right? Right? So, right. Morally, I don't see that you'd get sort of to the where you want to go, which is the idea.
Oh, I don't want to go anywhere.
If you take that idea, it's not going to get you to the conclusion that it's murder.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I mean, I agree with that. You seem to accept that if you reject that as a person, you've accepted that, you know, abortion is an all right thing to do. It's acceptable, morally acceptable. So
right, yeah, that's true. That's a good point. I mean, that you could say, well, it's part of the mother's body and you shouldn't sort of deface or maim yourself. But even if that's right, and we'd have to have a discussion of that, you know, it's a separate point. It doesn't turn out to be murder.
Right, it doesn't turn out to be murder. It might still even be reasonable and legal. Absolutely.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Thank you.
Oh, you're putting this all at the Reformation. Is that by choice or?
Well, in some, it's. I followed the Catholic teaching, and I'm not as familiar with the Protestant. Although I think a lot of Protestants just follow the Catholics on these things. One of the reasons why I talk more about Catholicism is partly because it has the pretension and it claims to the world that it's sort of an unchanging font of moral truth. And so since it's been around since, you know, and claims to be continuous with Jesus, then it's interesting, I think, just in its own right to follow, well, what happened over those, you know, 20 centuries. I don't know enough about the history of Protestantism to sort of say much about it, but you don't have a continuous tradition there in the way that you do with Catholicism.
Let me bring up one thing, the spirit. That makes it even more complicated. The spirit is, there's very little known about the spirit. It's supposedly a little more esoteric than the soul, and supposedly humans have spirits. Nothing else has a spirit, but other things have souls.
Oh, that's
Humans have souls and spirits, so that's another thing that makes it more complicated.
Right. When, are there views about when we get the spirit? Like, when does a fetus get the spirit in it?
Well, I don't know what they are, but it's worth considering.
Yeah. I that would be something worth looking into.
I'd like to go a little farther with your atheist morality of abortion.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I pretty much agree with. Would you consider it worse to kill something that had consciousness and suffers, such as a chimpanzee or a puppy, even, than a third trimester fetus? And if so, why?
Oh, well, that's a good question. In the third trimester, of course, you know, we think that the fetus has sentience, at least. Although I don't, you know, and I don't fully understand what people are saying, but that it's conscious in some ways. I assume they mean pleasure and pain. Somebody was explaining to me recently that probably most of the sensations that a third-term fetus has are auditory. That they start to hear things. And in fact, someone was saying to me that newborns need to be in an environment where there's a lot of sound, because for 3 months they've been in this very noisy environment and they sort of get spooked if they don't hear things. There's
not much to see.
There's not much to see. No, that's right. So maybe their eyes are closed. So I guess your point is, if I'm sort of understanding where you're going, the mental life, even in the third trimester of a fetus, is probably, you know, considerably less complicated than for a dog or a cat or a monkey. I forget which one's
chimpanzee.
Yeah, that's probably true. I think. Yeah. you know, maybe that's the right thing to say in that case. I mean, the thing is that, you know, if we're getting into the practicalities of it, there are very few women who need to have an abortion in the third trimester, and most everyone who wants to have it has done it, and so it's usually just for sort of very special health reasons.
I'm not promoting the idea, I'm just curious.
Yeah, but I mean, if your question is, how would I compare the mental life of a third-term fetus with a chimpanzee, I would say a chimpanzee has a considerably more complicated mental life, yeah.
And can suffer.
Yeah, probably in ways, right, that's right.
You mentioned that in approximately 1620 CE, the Catholic Church adopted a view that ensoulment occurs 3 days after conception.
Right.
Is possibly one of the reasons that they never changed to at conception is so that they could explain away the 50% plus of fertilized eggs that never attached to the uterus and huh? flushed out, and those aren't going to count as abortions because there was no ensoulment. Does that play into it?
That's interesting. Yeah, that's a good. That's also a very good question. But I mean, one thing you have to. One thing you have to keep in mind is, and again, I wish Connery had said a lot more about this, but what exactly was biology and medicine like in 1620?
Oh, no, I didn't mean they would know that in 1620.
Yeah, they had no way.
In later years, they said, we don't want to change this to that conception because we've learned about this other feature.
Yeah. But I thought, on the other hand, that that they oppose morning after pills and so on.
Well, they can get into that, too.
Right? And so, you know, and I've talked to Charlie Curran about this, and he says, you know, in the doctrine, right, as it now is, there is a little window of opportunity in there, in theory, right, for certain kinds of, you know, morning after pills and so on. And the only thing would be about the risk, because we don't know exactly when ensoulment takes place, maybe it's the second day, maybe it's the fourth, then you're taking that risk, so long as there's some window of opportunity.
What's the difference in golden mean?
Yeah, right. I also have been told that it's possible, you know, any day now, that Pope Benedict may declare sort of officially it occurs at conception. So they may just sort of completely eliminate that thing, and that would also have implications about morning after pills and so on. Right?
This talk reminds me of my Irish Catholic great-grandparents who, my great-grandmother had a miscarriage, the Catholic Church told her the baby wasn't going to heaven because it wasn't baptized in the Catholic Church. But I want to ask you, have you ever watched Childbirth?
No.
Anybody in here observed Childbirth?
The women have.
Well, I have, and it creeped me out. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Because I could see the baby, but it looked like a creature until it took that first breath. Then it became ensouled, I would say. Mm-hmm. It became, and that would correlate, that's one level of ensoulement, a possibility. I'm just throwing this out as an idea and ask you what you think of it. You're smiling.
Well, my wife is reminding me that I was present when my daughter was born. I blocked it out. It's rough on the farm. Yeah. Sorry.
I totally lost where I was going. But I wanted to know if they ever considered that as a possibility. It would kind of correlate to some scriptural reference that the Lord God breathed the breath, the air, the breath gave Adam his life. And I personally observed in childbirth, that baby looks like a creature. It creeped me out. And then when it breathed, it just became enlivened and looked like a cute little baby.
Right.
So that's one level of a possible ensoulement. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, you know, in some ways, that's sort of tying ensoulement to something, you know, sort of observable and different. I do actually think, again, historically, that some views about spirit, somebody help me here, but I think the Hebrew word for spirit, I think is the same as the Hebrew word for breath. That sort of ancient ideas about these things are in some ways more concrete than maybe these more abstract and philosophical things about this entity that's not physical, that they connected life to breath and thought of you as dying when you didn't breathe, and that the spirit had left you, which is to say breath had left you. And of course, I'm not endorsing that, but I'm just saying that that sort of, first of all, pushes the boundary, right, in a completely different direction from conception. I think, you know, morally, I might not have problems with drawing a line even a day or two after birth, and getting back to some ancient ideas, because, but I'm not fully committed to this, but I have read philosophers that I respect who say, look, you know, there are some birth defects that we may not find, and, you know, the sort of horrible birth defects until after birth. And so if there were a little window of opportunity after birth to sort of make some life and death decisions, and if there was some sort of, there are some infants that are just not going to survive, are going to have horrible existences, the most merciful thing might be to end their life right there. And if ensoulment took place, if we thought of ensoulment or becoming a human as happening a little bit after birth, then there'd be that kind of moral window of opportunity. That's how, I mean, in other words, I'm thinking of it in terms of the ethics of it rather than sort of the metaphysics of it and the ensoulment of it, because I find ensoulment such a, you know, a sort of impossible thing to pin down, that I'm thinking about it in terms of what's sort of workable morally.
Yeah, I heard indeed that it's, I think it's called something like abortion, a moral choice, and it was made several years ago. And in that DVD, there are several theologians interviewed from various faiths, and a Jewish theologian said that in that branch of Judaism, I believe, the Reform, the babies are considered ensouled when they take that first breath after birth. So when you ask that question, you might want to answer.
This is a lighthearted point. I don't know if you heard, last year Arizona passed a law saying that pregnancy started at the last period that the mother had, so roughly 2 weeks before conception. They did that was they wanted to, you know, there's a clock on how many weeks you have that you can have an abortion. If they start the clock running 2 weeks earlier, it's 2 weeks less time that mothers can have abortions. A fun song on YouTube, a woman from New York, recorded a song where she says, I'm moving to Arizona, and in Arizona I'm pregnant, and asked for all kinds of nice things and threats to go back to New York and have an abortion if they don't give me to her. She won't conceive me in first place. So that's kind of a fun addition to the pushing the big
That's pushing it back even further. Yeah, right. Gleam in your father's eye.
We've mostly been talking from the Judeo-Christian perspective. Could you talk a little bit about maybe some of the other religious traditions? No?
Yeah, I care. No. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, like Hinduism, what kind of views do they have on this sort of thing?
Yeah, I don't. I'm sure there are people in this room who know more than I do about something.
Could you speak a little bit about rationality as being basis for thinking? So there's a soul in there. I think you said that was one consideration at some point. I wondered, what would that look like?
You mean when would ensoulment take place if we thought of it that way?
Or how would they, yeah, how would they know that that being is more rational or started to be rational?
Right. Well, it is true that, as I understand it anyway, Aristotle thought that the human soul, that ensoulment takes place when it starts to move, and he thought that the soul would sort of facilitate movement, and it was pointed out that the soul is supposed to be a rational soul, so why would that be, you know, what would take place when ensoulment occurred? So if we thought, well, what would happen would be what the soul was designed to or fit for making the thing do, then it would be rational activity that you would expect. If that's when ensoulment would take place, it would seem most logically. Now, what you would take as being evidence of rationality, yeah, you know, it might be language, or it might be where it starts to sort of seem to make choices or something like that, but it does seem as though if that's how you're really going to think about it, it would be quite late. I mean, you know, sort of going in the opposite direction from Justin, like, you know, considerably after birth. I'm thinking of the joke that Jews tell about, you know, when does a Jewish boy become a man? The answer is when he graduates from medical school. So, you know, maybe that's when...
What's the last question?
A comment. You said that a minor figure moved the date. So that's kind of interesting.
Right.
Because Rand Paul, Republican senator from Kentucky, Ron Paul's son, has now moved the date again. His bill in Congress is that life begins at conception.
Right.
That's the bill. So.
Now, notice...
Yeah, minor figures moving, I guess.
Well, I mean, you know, legislatively, we can always, you know, that's movable. But now, notice, I mean, the way you put it is life, right, begins at conception, right?
But they don't have a soul to do
that? Well, yeah, I mean, I would say, now, this gets tricky, but I would say that the position was that it was alive, right, before it got a soul. Right, it was living but not ensouled, right? And so now, I think, you know, there are different concepts that people use to sort of frame the discussion. Okay. Ensoulment was the traditional one within Christianity. There was the other issue of contraception, but about when it becomes human, and they took that to mean when it becomes ensouled, although it was living before then, I guess. So, but sometimes people just frame it and they go, well, look, you know, the fetus is alive from the point of conception on. And I want to go, look, yes, it is alive, but, you know, so are plants. I mean, and so I don't see that it's being alive, which itself sort of decide the moral question. It seems to me this, and especially that it would be murder, right? Because it's not murder to kill any living thing, right? Like a plant. So it would seem to me that someone who's liberal about abortion, as I am, could grant that it's alive and say that that doesn't show that it's murder, or the moral equivalent of murder, to kill it if all that's true of it is that it's a living thing. Another way that people point this out is, you know, or some philosophers have said it has the human genetic code from the point of conception on. And it's been said, well, every cell in my body has the human genetic code. So if I had to pull off one cell and just kill it, I mean, am I committing murder by doing that? So the fact that it's living and that it's human in the genetic sense don't seem to me to be the decisive issues morally.
Thank you, Dr. Stradler.